Britain will face shortages of food, fuel and medicine if it leaves the EU without a deal. That's according to leaked government documents published by the Sunday Times. Jammed ports and a hard border in Ireland are also forecast in the dossier, which was reportedly compiled this month by the UK's Cabinet Office under the code name Operation Yellowhammer. The British newspaper said the document set out the most likely aftershocks of a no-deal Brexit, rather than the worst-case scenarios.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said on Wednesday that he accepted a government watchdog's report, saying he broke ethics rules by trying to interfere in a corporate criminal case. A scandal that has plagued his administration, but Trudeau said he disagreed with some of the report's conclusions and stopped short of apologizing. Canada's independent ethics commissioner found that Trudeau's team pressured the country's former attorney general to halt the criminal prosecution of construction giant SNC-Lavalin.
The water crisis in Newark, New Jersey is gaining momentum as an issue in the state. High lead levels were discovered, and officials are now having to tell the public what they're doing about it. Newark Mayor Ross Baraka says the problem is in the pipes. Baraka says the water is being treated, and around 38,000 water filters have been handed out to residents.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's August the 19th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell as we get another business week and another business day underway here. Lots going on. We'll hit the numbers from Wall Street and around the globe in a moment. Things look good for the start of this day of trading in the U.S. Those will be coming up momentarily on the program today. It's Monday, so we always try to do a CEO spotlight. And today, Stan Chia, the CEO of Vivid Seats, will be here. If you've bought a ticket to any event recently, a basketball game, a concert, chances are you have used Vivid Seats, or at least have been given the option to use Vivid Seats. Stan will be in our first segment this morning. A little later in the program, an update on the Asian carp problem as it relates to Lake Michigan. Somebody who has been writing and reporting a lot about this over the years is John Flesher, environmental correspondent at the Associated Press, and we'll talk to John about the latest Asian carp news at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Another week to keep close eyes on Wall Street. Stocks managed to stage a rally on Friday to end the week as bond yields tried to rebound from historic lows. At the closing bell on Friday, the Dow was up nearly 307 points. This morning, futures point to opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 235 points, nearly a full percent. Nearly a full percent on the S&P, nearly a percent on the NASDAQ this morning. Around the globe, in Europe, markets are generally in the green as well. In London, up by nearly three quarters. In Germany, up by nearly three quarters. In France, up nearly a half a percent, more than a half a percent. And in Asia, markets are also in the green this morning. The Nikkei ending the day up 144 points, nearly three quarters of a percent. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng up 557, nearly 2%, and the Shanghai up nearly 2%, up 59 points. In the U.S., oil is trading at $55.30 a barrel, up about 43 cents. As we begin the story, some important news. First, about the economy and the president's handling of the economy. A new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll shows Americans growing more uneasy about the president's handling of the economy, which has been one of his principal strengths. The erosion comes in tandem with rising public support for free trade as the Trump administration's tariffs conflict with China and their policies, the trade war dragging on with more tariffs threatened. By a narrow 49 to 46% margin, Americans still approve of Trump's handling of the economy, but that's down from 51 to 41% approval in early May. At the same time, the survey shows that Americans approve of free trade by a 64% to 27% margin, better than 2-to-1. That's up by nearly a point or two from 57% to 37% early on in the Trump administration. The more positive assessment, sharply driven by political independents, who now embrace free trade by a 77 to 15% margin. President Trump's CEO, Apple CEO Tim Cook, warned him that tariffs that the president plans to impose on China in less than 2 weeks would hurt Apple and help Samsung rival the rival Samsung. Trump said yesterday that Cook made a compelling argument when the two met for dinner on Friday. The president said Cook pointed out that 10% tariffs scheduled to take effect September 1st would hit Apple hard because its products are largely made in China. That would give South Korean giant Samsung an advantage because its products are made in Vietnam, India, Indonesia, and other countries, not subject to tariffs. The president says he's thinking about Cook's argument. Let's begin front and center this morning with seats, tickets. Chances are you've used this service if you've gone to a concert or a sporting event. Chicago-based Vivid Seats is now the leading independent ticket marketplace in North America. And as it grows, the company has just launched a rewards program and a new app. Joining us this morning is Vivid Seats CEO Stan Chia. Stan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. Congratulations, too, on the success over at Vivid Seats. Everything seems to be going pretty well, doesn't it?
Look, I mean, we've had an amazing ride. I'm so privileged to be leading the organization, you know, 500 strong here in Chicago, just an amazing group of people, an amazing untold story. It's great.
I want to get into the story so that we can tell it this morning, but I want people to have a sense of the organization and what you do, and give us some specifics and characteristics of the company, if you will.
Sure. Yeah, Vivid Seats, you know, we were founded in 2001. We are actually the largest premier independent ticket marketplace in the country. So we are an option for consumers who are looking for tickets to any type of live event, whether you're a sports fan, whether you're looking for Cubs tickets, White Sox tickets, Bears tickets, Hawks tickets, theater, whatever you're looking for, we have options. We've grown really, really well. A lot of this scale allows us to translate that into amazing consumer benefits. You'll find we are one of the greatest values out there when you're looking at tickets. And just last week, we launched Vivid Seats Rewards, which is really the industry's first rewards and loyalty program for every type of ticket buyer. So when you buy on Vivid Seats now, it doesn't matter whether you're buying a $10 ticket, a $500 ticket, you're going to start earning rewards, and those are rewards that you can earn for future ticket purchases. So we're really confident and comfortable that we've got one of the best options out there for anyone looking for tickets to live events.
I want to go into that a little bit more in detail. Talk to us a little bit about the reward system, and it sort of coincides with the new app. You have a shiny new app out as well, don't you?
We do, and man, is it shiny.
It's nice.
I think if I go back for a second, I think we're one of the best untold tech stories in Chicago from a consumer tech perspective. There's really not a lot of huge consumer tech companies in Chicago that were founded in Chicago, that started up in Chicago. Vivid Seats is one of those stories. We're actually at pretty, pretty large scale. We've got tens of millions of fans that buy tickets from us. We process billions of dollars of sales a year, and we do it having raised very little money. You know, I think the founders themselves are an amazing story. They're one of the few companies that really reached unicorn status without having to take a lot of outside capital. So an amazing tech story. And as we've grown with our journey, one of the things we wanted to do this year was really accelerate some of the value that we could provide to consumers. As our teams worked hard on it, it really came to this point where we could simultaneously launch an amazing new app. We launched our new app right in time with Vivid Seats Rewards. Our new app is really focused on user experience, making it really easy for users to discover things. You'll see a lot of items like recommendations and personalization as we start to build really relevant content for all of our users. And then as they see the relevant content that our app is starting to surface to them, they're also going to be able to participate in Vivid Seats Rewards, which, like I said, is the industry's first rewards program for really the everyday fan.
So talk to us a little bit about the personalization. I'm guessing I have a profile, and when I start buying tickets, or you look at what I like and what I'm buying, and you recommend stuff to me. Is that how it works?
That's right. I think we're going to be able to do things that are very personal to you. So you'll actually be able to go into our app and tell us, first off, what are your favorites? Do you like the Cubs? Do you like the White Sox? Do you like Hamilton? Do you like Guns N' Roses? All of that. And we'll certainly take that and surface things of that nature to you. I think what's really going to be great as we proceed with the journey about learning about the user and making sure that we can surface things that we think you'd like, we'll be able to use all of that data to, again, pinpoint what we think would be a live event that would be great to you. And we'll also show you things like what's trending in the area, what are local Chicagoans liking to go, and as we get even more local, maybe we'll be able to tell you what people in Lakeview or the Loop are liking to go to.
I'm guessing there are fans out there more into this than I am, but let's say it's just a casual concert goer. What I like to get is I want to know when a show is coming and not hear about it too late that it's already too late to get tickets. Is that the kind of personalization that you would do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now already when you go in there, you know, we're going to be able to tell you when things are coming. We're going to tell you, you know, hey, what does it look like? Is it trending? So you're going to know if tickets are moving or not. One of the great things that we have being such an established player in the industry is we've got the widest selection of ticket inventory available, right? I think we've got over 500,000 events, you know, per year that we list through our marketplace around the country. And generally, we're never short of tickets for an event. So you're going to be able to come to our platform, hopefully in our shiny new app, and you're going to be able to find tickets, whether you're buying 2 weeks out or day of, we're going to have tickets available.
How do you do that? And I don't want you to give us your secret sauce, but what's the magic behind this?
I think we've cultivated just amazing relationships across the years with a lot of professional sellers who have a lot of the ticket inventory. So when we've, through these relationships that we have, we're able to make sure that then we can surface them to consumers with really tons of value for them when they come and buy. On top of that, we have great deals. You know, I think if you look at our portfolio of partners that we work with, you know, the Bears here are a great partner of ours. We work with a lot of teams, Notre Dame across the country. And so we're really able to solidify selection across our platform for consumers that are looking for tickets.
The partnerships are very important, aren't they? I know there's also some news about you partnering with Rolling Stone to do some things. And this seems to be the way of the world now. It's about the partnerships. That's how you not only kind of find your way into these little crevices, but also succeed in the end run, right? In the long run.
Yeah, I think in every industry, you need to find great partners where there's a lot of overlap and there's opportunities both for you to win with each other as partners, but also for your joint customers to win on, right? So, you know, if you go down that route and you think again about live events and you think about the categories, we have some of the best partners in the industry per category. In sports, you know, ESPN, we're their official secondary ticket marketplace. We work closely with them. And this year we launched with Rolling Stone magazine, you know, kind of as you talked about. Every concert goer, every music fan knows Rolling Stone, and we were so proud to do this partnership with them as kind of their first ticketing partner. And it helps us as well as we think through kind of value that we can provide to our customers, letting them know that Rolling Stone and Vivid Seat are in a partnership. I think it just gives you that sense of security and safety that, you know, you're working with great companies who really know what they're doing.
You mentioned earlier that the founders in the beginning of Vivid Seats, they didn't have a hard time finding funding. Why is that? Is it something about just the recipe that you've put together that the company is built on, or is there something locally that's happening that makes that possible?
I'd go back to, I think this is about the people. I think, you know, it's really about hard work, work ethic, a lot of good, you know, I'll put it out there first that I'm not from Chicago, but I married a Midwestern girl. And there's just something, I think, about the work ethic here. You know, I think there was a lot of hard work put into building the company, and it doesn't matter, I think, whether it was founded almost 20 years ago or now, you're still going to find people in the Midwest, in Chicago, and at Vivid Seats who work extremely hard to make sure that, you know, we run a growing, sustainable, and profitable business.
I've read that the sense of competition, and I don't want to get into too much about the competitors in this space for Vivid Seats, but part of what's driving this is the desire of fans to have a choice in buying tickets. They don't want to go to another place that may have had a bad reputation or that has a bad reputation or has been around so long that they've sort of worn out their welcome a little bit. Talk to us about the competition in this space and how you capitalize on it.
Yeah, I think there's players in the ticketing space, right? I think, you know, I like to think about ticketing as an industry unlike perhaps others, where it wasn't a hard shift to get people online, right? You know, you talk about, you know, I came from food. There's a little bit of a shift in food where people were eating in the restaurant. Now, do you want it delivered to you? I don't think ticketing had that same challenge, right? It was really easy to say, hey, why don't you start buying tickets online? And really, consumers didn't resist that. When you think about us and how we position ourselves, I think it's really important that we consider the consumer value, what they're looking for. Safety, trust, security. We offer all of that. You know, we have our 100% buyer guarantee as well on top of value and selection. We really make sure that buyers who buy a ticket from us can feel really comfortable that they're going to get that ticket. And if anything were to ever go wrong, we make sure that we honor our 100% buyer guarantee. In the event of any canceled event, we refund everything, no questions asked. And then now on top of that, you know, we launched our rewards program. So really, you've got safety, you've got security in the transaction, you've got a buyer guarantee, and guess what? You're earning rewards with us too.
It must be frustrating for you, though, because I read where you, your goal is to make everybody happy, the fans, the sellers, the partners, to make sure everybody's happy all of the time. That can't be easy, though.
You know, it's true. It's also what's fun and challenging, I would say, about a lot of marketplace businesses, right? You got a lot of customers, and really the people who buy tickets are customers. The people who sell tickets are customers. And I think, you know, we really have a great model where as we sell more tickets to our fans, it means we sell more tickets on behalf of our sellers. And as long as that's happening, everybody seems to be winning, right? As long as the tickets are moving, fans are getting access to events, fans are getting to access to their events in a competitive way where it's very valuable to them, mm-hmm. I think they win and our sellers win with us too.
You've alluded to your background a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit about that. What from your past has prepared you for this role specifically?
I'd say I'm a very privileged citizen of the world. You know, I kind of have had a lot of diversity in my own upbringing. I was born in Singapore, grew up in New York City, served in the Singapore military. You know, so I'd say a lot of that multiculturalness has kind of been embedded in me with how to lead and been afforded that privilege. And then as I've kind of developed in my own career, I've had the fortune of working at a lot of really great e-commerce companies. You know, I started into e-commerce and tech at Amazon, and so ran the retail toy business there. And then before coming to Vivid Seats, I came to Chicago first and had the opportunity to work with Grubhub, another great Chicago e-commerce company helping stand up their delivery business, and now here at Vivid Seats. So if you think about it, I've had really an amazing opportunity to look at technology, really immerse myself in marketplace businesses across some of the best categories you can think about, like toys. Who doesn't like toys? Food. Who doesn't like food? Yeah. And now live events. I mean, it's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. It can't be a coincidence either that there are a couple of unicorns in there, right?
I'd say no coincidence there again, and it's just I'm fortunate enough to have had the opportunity to work at all of them.
What do you foresee as the challenges moving forward? I know you probably have a full year, maybe even a 5-year, perhaps even a 10-year plan. What do you see coming in the future?
I think with every business, and you know, I think ours, and maybe you touched on it a little bit earlier. One of the big things is making sure that you understand who are the customers that you serve. And for us, we do serve a lot of customers, mm-hmm. right? We have our buyers, we actually have our sellers, and we have our partners as well. And I think the biggest challenge for us is to continue to really grow a business that adds value to every single one of them, right? And I think the challenge to marketplace businesses is if you lose focus on one, it tends to hurt the other. Mm-hmm. And so we make sure that we continue to focus on all of our customers, continuing to drive value, and that's probably going to be what continues to be a challenge going into the future.
When you think about the future in terms of live events, do you see much changing in this space? Because it's hard to imagine how a basketball game or a football game or a concert would change in 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, I think I would never discount the ability, for human innovation and technology to disrupt things. But I think you're never going to get away from the joy of live events. I mean, that's we staunchly believe that. I personally believe that. I'm sure most of you do. There's nothing like hearing the roar of a crowd live, cheering that intensity of cheering for your favorite team or just headbanging to your favorite music. I don't think anyone's ever going to get away from the joy of experiencing that live. So, we're excited to see what happens, but we're pretty confident that that's going to be around for a while.
Maybe some robots and virtual reality or some other computerized additions or enhancements, perhaps?
Maybe Radiohead got closest with OK Computer back then, but yeah, I don't know.
Let me ask you about the we love having CEOs in, and we use the opportunity to ask them about how the economy is doing, how it's impacting their business. Is there anything you can tell from the economy by the number of shows that people are going to or events that people are going to?
You know, it's hard. You know, I'd first say I'm certainly no expert on the economy, but when we look at how our business is performing, I think people continue to love live events. And I think with a lot of what's happening in the world today, I think there is a joy in that, kind of as we talked about. You know, there's a great release in being able to go to theatrical production, a sporting event, a concert. And we continue to see people do that. We're having a great year from a growth perspective. And I don't think currently we see any any signs of that slowing down.
How do you measure growth?
We look at how many people are continuing to buy with us, and tickets, and we continue to see our business growing year over year.
And when the sellers and partners come in with all smiles, that probably a good sign as well.
We want everybody to come in with all smiles.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. If you had the opportunity to go to any show or any sporting event to get any ticket right now, what would it be?
Can I take us back in time a little?
You can, sure.
Yeah, you know what I would have loved to be at, but I wasn't at. So I am a giant New York sports fan, and so I am a New York Giants fan as well. I would have loved to be at that Super Bowl where David Tyree made that helmet grab on fourth down. I would have loved to be there. Can't buy a ticket to that anymore because it's
time
in the
machine,
past.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the disruption that's, you're talking about, right? Hey, maybe we'll have time machines and tickets. And if there is, that's a ticket I'm getting.
I know we appreciate you coming in and telling the story as you continue to tell the story. Aside from doing radio interviews and talking to people like me, how are you else getting this story out there?
Yeah, I think everything has its time and place. You know, I think we're again, you guys, we appreciate you having us on very much. I think we're looking through the right way to tell our story, and we're certainly at very early stages of doing that. I think we'll look at different opportunities, different mediums to do that, but very early stage for us.
Well, Stan, we appreciate you coming in. It's good meeting you, and all the best to everybody at Vivid Seats.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Stan Chia, CEO of Vivid Seats in Chicago. You can find them online at vividseats.com. We're going to continue our conversation with Stan after the bell this morning and post the full conversation in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. Well, it turned out the fight against the Asian carp spreading to Lake Michigan. There is a new study out that suggests the Asian carp can survive in Lake Michigan if it gets there, that it will find plenty of food to eat. There had been some thought earlier that that may not be the case for a number of different reasons. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this is John Flesher, environmental correspondent at the Associated Press, who's been writing about this topic for many, many years. John, good morning. I'd like to begin first with this study from the University of Michigan, the question about whether or not the Asian carp getting into the Great Lakes, is Lake Michigan specifically, if they would have enough food to eat when they get there. This study seems to put that at rest, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does suggest that they could have a better chance at finding enough food than had previously been thought. There had been some studies done primarily by the U.S. Geological Survey, which suggested that if the Asian carp did manage to get into Lake Michigan, they may have to stay near shoreline areas and river mouths because that's where they would find most of their food. And the reason they thought that is because of the invasive zebra and quagga mussels that have gotten into the lakes in recent decades. And they filtered out so much of the plankton that silver and bighead carp rely on that the thinking was there just wouldn't be enough out in the open waters for the Asian carp to eat. But this latest study suggests that that is not necessarily true. And the reason is that the University of Michigan team did some computer modeling and concluded that there's a lot more food in the water column and even down near the bottom of the open waters than was originally thought. And in particular, they're focusing on a type of food that could politely be called pseudo-feces. It's actually the excrement from these mussels, the invasive mussels. And it's not the best high-quality food in the world, but studies have shown that the Asian carp will, in fact, eat it and that there's a good bit of it out in the open waters. So if they did get in, the thinking is that they could get together and reproduce, and as they wanted to branch farther out and look for other fertile areas, there would be enough of this kind of food out in the lake to keep them alive in order for them to move around.
And that's sort of coupled with the fact that these fish are pretty robust, aren't they? I mean, they can go for a long time without eating, number one, right? And then they can also eat just about anything and survive.
Correct, yes. It has been found that they can fast a good bit if they need to. That's because they eat so much at a time when they are eating. They're just veritable eating machines. The the Asian carp, interestingly, don't have sort of stomachs in the normal sense that we think of, so they're just constantly needing to eat and process food. So they get pretty big. The biggest of them have been recorded as big as 100 pounds, although most of them don't reach that weight. But they are quite robust, and they will just vacuum up the plankton that is right at the base of the aquatic food chain and is needed by so many other fish, to especially in their early part of the life cycle. So that's why people are so worried about them.
Yeah, the money involved here, the potential damage that the Asian carp could cause if they got into the Great Lakes. Talk to us a little bit about the fishing industry and their big, first of all, and how much it would cost potentially, and why the fishing industry is so concerned.
Sure. Well, in the Great Lakes, the sport fishing industry alone has been estimated at about $7 billion a year. We all know, you know, how many people love to come up into the Great Lakes region and fish for salmon, for walleye, perch, and a number of other species. And there's also the commercial fishing industry. And the problem is that if Asian carp get in, and if they really are able to destabilize food chains by gobbling up all that plankton, that they could outcompete some of these prized species of fish. There have been studies in some of the rivers where the Asian carp have already invaded that suggest that this could well be the case. No one knows exactly how bad it would be, but they just want to avoid ever having to find out.
Let's remind people why we focus first on Lake Michigan and all of this, because the Asian carp are not too far away, are they?
Right. The what they call the leading edge of the Asian carp population is believed to be, maybe 50, 60 miles away from Lake Michigan. Interestingly enough, they have been there for quite some time and have sort of stalled out, and there's some speculation as to why that is, why they haven't moved farther closer to the lake. Although there have been a few cases in recent years where individual carp have been found very close up in the Chicago area, and so there's speculation as to whether there are others that have not been found or whether these were just outliers that somehow managed to get up there. But either way, when you think about where they got started, which was down in the southern Mississippi River, they were imported back in the 60s and 70s to clean out algae from sewage lagoons and fish farms down there, and they've made it all the way this far. And so, yeah, there's a lot of concern that because they have come up so far in the Illinois River and headed straight toward Chicago, that at some point that might well be the pathway that they could use to get into the Great Lakes.
You mentioned that they seem to have stalled out. Is that because some of the efforts to stop them might be working? Talk to us a little bit, too, about what those efforts have been.
Sure. It's not quite certain. In fact, coincidentally, just within the past few days, there was another study that came out which speculated that that one factor in the reason that the carp have not moved farther up is that some of the pollution that is in Chicago wastewater that comes downstream might be a deterrent. There might be various chemicals, hormones, things like that in the water that keep the carp from swimming upstream. That's one possibility, and there are a number of others. The infrastructure situation changes too when you get up into that area, and it becomes more of an engineered canal type of area as opposed to a more natural river. That may be a factor that keeps them from trying to get farther up as well. But yes, either way, they have not gotten up much farther yet, but of course, the concern remains that they could, particularly the juveniles, could find a way to get on up further.
Yeah, I know we've seen at the lock and dams, the electric barriers. How successful are those? And I know there have been some proposals to sort of enhance some of these protective measures, too. Talk to us about the cost analysis there versus the potential giant costs that we could see if they get to the lake.
Right. Yes, there is a little network of electric barriers in Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal, which is about 37 river miles from the where it opens up into Lake Michigan, and the Army Corps of Engineers and other federal agencies that that operate these dams and have been watching them for years, along with the Chicago DNR, believe that they have been very successful and that they do, in fact, keep fish from getting past. They emit very rapid pulses of electricity, and any fish that gets near will and is not turned away will get a pretty solid jolt if they try to get into that field. And so they think that this is working pretty well. But because of various concerns about whether some fish could get through, perhaps kind of pulled through as vessels go through, if they get into that backwash and kind of get pulled through, or if there were ever an outage where they were knocked out, things like that, the thinking has been from a lot of people that that just isn't good enough. And so the latest proposal has been to re-engineer the Brandon Road Lock and Dam down near Joliet, Illinois, and to strengthen it and add some defense mechanisms in that area, even farther downstream, to keep the carp from advancing. There is a proposal that was released earlier this year by the Army Corps of Engineers after many years of study that calls for sort of establishing what you might call a gauntlet of different items or different mechanisms there, including another electric barrier and these underwater speakers that would emit very loud sounds and little curtains of bubbles, things like that that would turn fish away. And that is has been approved by the Army Corps. It's now in the hands of Congress. And it would the cost estimate runs anywhere from about $778 million up to about $831 million, depending on scheduling and various other factors. So it's expensive. No doubt about that, but those who favor it say that the alternative could be even worse.
Yeah, I mean, and $7 billion, and you mentioned earlier the potential cost if the carp do get into Lake Michigan, that's a small estimate. I mean, if they manage to get into all of the Great Lakes, I mean, we'd be talking about even more than that, wouldn't we?
Sure, and you have to bring tourism into it. One thing we haven't mentioned, but a lot of people are familiar with, is that the one type of Asian carp, the silver carp, have this propensity to spring out of the water. You might have seen videos on YouTube or on television where if these fish are startled, they will just sort of spring like flying fish out of the water. And I have been out with scientists in boats when this has taken place, and you have to duck to avoid getting hit. And some people have gotten hit and have gotten broken noses and all kinds of things. So the concern is that if you think about the tourism industry, the number of people who like to boat and swim and go out and fish in areas along shorelines, that's a huge industry in the Great Lakes region, estimated at about $16 billion. So put the two together, and yeah, there's a lot of concern about what the impact could be.
Yeah, if you've ever been to one of these areas that have already been decimated by the Asian carp, whether it be a pond or a lake or something, a small lake, they're just dead. I mean, even ducks, birds don't even come to those places.
There are some areas, yeah, where they believe that there have been some pretty serious effects. In areas of the Illinois River, the Asian carp are the by far the predominant fish there. They measure the percentage of the overall what they call biomass that the different fish will occupy by fish weight, and that the Asian carp are believed to account for like 60% or more of the overall fish weight in parts of the Illinois River. So yeah, they can just they can really just dominate an ecosystem in ways that are not very good.
John, do you get the sense from members of Congress that they're treating this as the emergency that it is?
Certainly within the Great Lakes region, the members of Congress seem to be pretty united behind this. I have written a lot of stories about Great Lakes restoration issues over the years and have been struck by the way that these particular issues can seem to unite both Democrats and Republicans in ways that just about nothing else can. I think there's a real appreciation and within the Great Lakes delegation for how seriously people who live in the Great Lakes region take these waters. These are really the heart and soul of this region, and there's been a lot of support for other programs like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which deals with a number of the legacy issues in the lakes. And so, yes, I think there is a lot of support for getting some action on this. In the state of Illinois, there is some concern. Your governor at this point has indicated a willingness to talk with the other Great Lakes states, but under the process that the federal government has for these types of major infrastructure projects, there needs to be some cost sharing and a local partner to participate in this, and the state of Illinois has indicated a willingness to do that, but they want some help from the other Great Lakes states. And there was recently a discussion in Chicago with representatives of the other Great Lakes states to see how the others would be willing to pitch in and help. The state of Michigan has said that it would provide up to $8 million for some of the preliminary work, design work, and other tasks that need to go forward in order for the project to happen. But Illinois has made clear that they want this to be a regional effort since everyone has skin in the game.
Well, John, I've been reading your work and appreciating it for many years. I'm sure our listeners will recognize your name from many bylines. We appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting with us.
Been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
John Flesher, environmental correspondent at the Associated Press on the Asian carp situation.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are up 237 points, nearly 1%. S&P futures up about 1% as well. NASDAQ futures up a little bit more than 1% this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, as we trade commodities this week, we're hoping we can continue what happened in the grain market last Friday when December corn went up a dime a bushel and November soybeans up 8.25, and even wheat traded higher up 2 cents. We hope we will not continue Friday's trade at the Mercantile Exchange. December lean hogs down the $3 daily limit. And the cattle contracts down 67 to 92 cents a hundredweight. Feeder cattle contracts down $1 to $1.17 in the Friday trade. Canada will be spending $1.3 billion over 8 years to compensate dairy farmers facing greater competition due to free trade deals and attempting to satisfy an influential group of voters 2 months before a national election. The payments to dairy farmers recognize sales they have lost after trade agreements were struck with the European Union and Pacific nations. And Prime Minister Trudeau's government will make no further dairy market access concessions in other trade negotiations. Well, the state fair season pretty much ended yesterday here in the Midwest, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa, and bringing their state fairs to a close. But we move into another busy week. Wednesday and Thursday, August 21 and 22, we'll be welcoming members of GrowMark to Chicago. They'll be holding their annual gathering and agribusiness symposium at the Hilton Hotel on Wednesday and Thursday. And then, of course, Thursday, Half Century of Progress show gets underway at Rantoul. We'll see you there. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. A couple more headlines before we leave you this morning. Tesla is trying to spark its solar panel business by letting consumers rent rooftop systems rather than buy them. Tesla CEO Elon Musk announced the offering in a series of tweets yesterday. The company will allow residents of 6 states to rent a solar power system starting at $50 a month or $65 a month in California for a small setup fee. Musk says consumers can cancel any time, although Tesla's website says there's a $1,500 charge to remove panels and restore the roof to its previous condition. The offerings will begin first in Arizona, California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and in Mexico. A steel company, Northwest Indiana, has apologized for a spill of cyanide and ammonia that led to a fish kill and prompted closures of beaches along Lake Michigan.
ArcelorMittal issued a statement on Friday saying it apologized and accepted responsibility for the incident from the Burns Harbor facility. The National Park Service closed the Portage Lakefront and Riverwalk Beach areas at Indiana Dunes National Park. The nearby city of Ogden Dunes also closed its beach. The fish kill occurred near a yacht club and marina in Portage, about 25 miles east of Chicago. Official figures show that inflation across the 19-country eurozone was lower in July than anticipated, bolstering expectations that the European Central Bank will provide another shot of stimulus to the single currency bloc next month. Eurostat says consumer prices across the eurozone were up 1% in the year to July. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, August the 11th, the focus is on home sales in a week that's otherwise light on major economic reports. The July report on existing home sales will be out on Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, minutes of the most recent meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee. Thursday brings the weekly look at first-time claims for unemployment benefits. New home sales will be released for July on Friday. In addition to the Eurozone inflation numbers today, quarterly earnings from Estee Lauder, Weibo, and Baidu earnings all coming out before or after the opening bell and the closing bell today. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, August the 19th.